Red Door Products is a new adult toy company focusing on providing quality toys and normalizing pleasure. Our vision in the future is to provide a space not only to shop, but to talk about your desires in a non-judgmental environment. We are working on adding a space to connect our customers with sex therapists and coaches if they would like to proceed on a more professional level. We just want to normalize sex and all the fun kinks everyone has. Shop for thousands of products now. Use code STRIPSIA3 to get 20% off your order. Everyone has a kink. What's yours? You can find us at buyreddoorproducts.com, on Instagram at red_door_products.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Stripped by Sia, your podcast for strippers, sex workers, and all the fancy naked people in between. I am your host, Steph Sia, aka Kimchi on stage, aka Sia on camera on Streammate, aka Sia on camera on OnlyFans, and former sugar baby of many years, many years ago, aka 11 years ago. I've had a lot of time dipping my toes in sex work, and I bring to you this show, your weekly podcast, to talk about destigmatizing sex work, to share the stories of sex workers so society doesn't have to paint all these inaccurate portrayals and representation of what they think that we do, and what they think, how we live and whatnot. Lots of misconceptions in general. So I do that by, bringing different guests onto the show every single week, including this week. And that really has a huge range in terms of guests. So I'm talking about, on-screen talent. We're talking about cam models. We're talking about strippers. But we're also talking about directors, producers, people behind the scenes, executive directors at nonprofit organizations, charities, and whatnot. So really trying to paint a holistic approach and picture to sex work. So again, you really get the real damn thing here. So been doing the show for past, 5 years now, which is really cool. Still continuing to do this. Oh, she's going. If anyone's like watching the video on Patreon, they'll see that the cat has now left Lulu's lap.
She'll come back.
She'll come back. And I did mention Patreon because those of you are and have been supporting the show since season 4, because that's when I decided to do a Patreon, mainly because people are like, I want to donate to you because you provide information for free and you are a great resource. So where can I donate to? So instead of going to use my PayPal, because we all know that PayPal is problematic, I started a Patreon, which is also actually kind of problematic towards sex workers. But anyways, all the platforms are a little bit crazy against sex workers. But I do want to say thank you to those who have supported. Your money goes directly to my web hosting for stripbyc.com, and also to help me attend adult industry events. I probably won't be at any events, at least in this first half of the year. It's looking chaotic. But perhaps maybe in the fall, so stay tuned. But again, going back to the people that are in the second and third tiers of Patreon, just want to say a quick hello, as you do get a fan recognition shout out. So if you are not interested in this, just like fast forward to the 5 minute line and we'll go from there. But just want to say hello to Dan from Red Door Products from Seattle area. We've got McKenna King from Edmonton. Hello, who's a former guest on the show. We also have B. York, also former guest on the show, a fellow creator based in Seattle. We've got Eric Araujo. We've got Moxie Mayhem, Selena Money. We've got Geyser, Justin Erickson from Vancouver, Washington, and Snoo Snoo all the way from Germany. Thank you guys so much for your support. If you're a listener or a person that like wants to support the show, you can go ahead by going to patreon.com/strippedbysia, and you can check all the things there. You have tiers starting at $4 a month, and you get access to the video exclusive that's basically not available anywhere. Also, bonus episodes also no longer available anywhere as well. So you can treat yourself there and also kind of get a sneak peek on who I'm bringing on the show, what topics I'm hoping to tackle in future seasons and whatnot. So go check it out. It's patreon.com/strippedbysia. And I know I usually leave this to the end, but if you have been a long-time listener of the show, I would like urge you to, or ask you to, rate 5 stars on Apple as well as Spotify. Again, these ratings are not just for nothing. They actually help people discover the show. So just help your fellow sex workers out. Or maybe you're not, they're not even sex workers. Maybe it's people that are actually doing research before they get into this whole industry, because there's actually a lot to know for, you know, that I believe you should know before you kind of like jump both feet in. So you could do that again, rate 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. And if you do have, if you do listen and access your podcast on Apple Podcasts, you could also write a review there as well. I do read them all. So thank you. Thank you. Okay, we're at the 5-minute mark. I am very excited to talk to this person this week, who's also a dear friend of mine in sex work, but also in real life, which is really great. I love bringing my friends on the show, which is awesome, awesome. I do want to put out a trigger or a content warning right here, right now, because we are going to be talking and discussing doxing, basically. So unfortunately, this person, who I will announce very soon, has recently, I want to say, is going through currently a doxing situation. So if this is a trigger for you, no offense taken, you can go ahead and skip the episode. That's totally fine. We'll have a completely different topic next week, but just want to throw that out there in case that might be causing a trigger for you. So with that being said, I'm very excited to be chatting with my friend Lulu Adore. If you're not familiar, actually, you know what? Fun fact. She was on the show before under a different name. Yes, in a different part. Like, this is maybe like 4 years ago, maybe. Under the name Serotonin. And we're talking about the troupe, the cabaret troupe, the burlesque troupe that you were in before, and how that rebranded. Yes. And now you're fully, I say, exotic dancer, a professional dancer, adult entertainer. Mm-hmm. And also, can I also say, like, seamstress at Bailey and Bling? Shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I'm actually wearing a Bailey and necklace right now for those watching the video. So, yeah.
Yay. Well, welcome, Lulu. It's great to have you on again. And
thank you.
We're going to talk about all the things, but yes, definitely your story, how you got here, how, like, much things have changed over the course of 4 years.
Yeah. Oh, so much has changed. So much has changed.
So much has changed. Before we dive in, maybe we can, I can throw this back to you, because yes, this is just a little nugget. I mean, I do know a lot more about you, obviously, since we are friends in real life, but I think it's still important for me to give my guests the opportunity to describe themselves in their own words and terms. So feel free to go ahead.
Yeah, so as you said, my name is Lulu Adore, previously Serotonin, if you knew me under any other capacity. I started this whole adventure in burlesque, in that sort of aspect, and it just kind of was a gradual transition into full-blown stripper. While I was doing burlesque and stuff, I was doing lots of amateur nights and like baby stripper stuff. And then, yeah, just the whole transition happened, found my club, and I'm there, and it's just been wonderful. I honestly wouldn't change it for anything. And a fun fact that I usually tell my customers and stuff is, you know, believe it or not, I used to work corporate and I don't anymore. And I just love what I do so much, and I don't have plans on going back anytime soon. So yeah,
yay.
Like, this is fully my choice.
Yeah, and it has been a journey too. I mean, let's maybe, I don't know if you want to start from the beginning, whatever your beginning is, but I know like the audience is always very curious in terms of like, how did you enter sex work? Because I think like a lot of listeners, especially those who are using this show to like do research, they're like, what was your first foray? How did you get into things?
So my first foray, I would say, is when I was doing burlesque under the name Serotonin, as we were previously saying, oh, the cat has come back. as I was previously saying, I was in Cabaret Tourlage, and we performed at the Penthouse. And so this was like years and years ago. And so that was kind of my first foray technically into it, because with the burlesque troupe having their shows in a strip club, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I would see some of the strippers afterwards. And then I heard about, because it's the Penthouse. The Penthouse is like the only club in the city currently that has that has an amateur night. Here, Kat, you need to move.
Yeah. Yeah, I think currently that's the only one that has an amateur night.
That has an amateur. Or back in the, back when I was sort of starting, it was the only one that had an amateur night. None of the other clubs had any amateur night, so it just happened to coincide quite nicely. And so because of that, I was like, okay, you know, I'll try an amateur night. And so I just kept doing them, and just I kept doing that, and that's my that was the beginnings of that. I really started getting into performing for things like Sin City Fetish Night, doing like, Passion Portals and things like that. And those events, they're wonderful, but I also got connected to more sex workers through that. And it just kind of continued to push me into that direction. I was like, you know what, this is something I really wanted to do. And, one of my other best friends is also a, you know, she's been at the club that I've been at for a long, long time. Shout out to Katana.
Yes!
She, we love her. We love Katana. She's been at the club that I've been at for a very long time. And we always had this dream of like, oh, we'll work at the same club together. And like, it'll be wonderful. And then it just happened. And, you know, it's awesome. So we're very happy that we're, you know, living our one of our BFF dreams. And
yay.
Anytime we're at the club together and we're selling dances together, it's called a BFD, a best friend dance, and everyone knows it.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's been a thorough journey.
It's been a very, it's been a kind of a crazy journey, but I love it. And I'm very happy with where I am right now in terms of, you know, my life. Like, you know, I was very unhappy doing corporate. I guess this kind of ties into the doxing and the family situation, because, you know, my family was very much like, they really wanted me to be in the corporate side of things. And I've always been a performer at heart, and I didn't really want to do that. So yeah, that it's nice. I'm living my truth now, but it's not necessarily what everyone else wants me in my family wants me to do. So
yeah. And that's like a really good thing to note though too, like, again, you're recognizing like, okay, I know what I want to do. Parents, people, peers sometimes have different expectations of what they want of you, but at the end of the day, you are the one that has the autonomy and choice over what decisions you'd want to make in your life and what kind of career path you'd want to carve out for yourself. So I think sometimes that can come off as like really entitled, like thinking they know what is like quote unquote best
for you. Oh, it is. Yeah, no, because at the end of the day, they don't actually know what's best for you. You live in your own body and you're the only one that knows what makes you really, truly happy. Something that I always go by is, as long as you're safe and healthy, at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to. As long as you're safe and you're happy and you're healthy, and, you know, with what you're doing with work. Like, really.
It really should be that simple. Unfortunately, it's not. Like, it's like, very, very complicated and nuanced in so many ways. And, of course, with your own personal story, there are so many layers here. I guess we'll maybe take it back again, like talking about like your burlesque days. Cause I know a lot about your story. I feel I know your story.
We got to tell it.
We got to tell it. And maybe we can kind of start there.
Yeah. Cause so I guess what will happen is in the burlesque days, cause this will give a lot of context to like the situation now. So way, way back in my burlesque days, I actually had made my Instagram account public. But I had blocked all of my family on it. And so I was like, you know, this will be fine. Cause I wanted to be discovered. I wanted people to like see, oh, like Serotonin is around me. Where is she going to be performing? So I did that. And then it was actually my father, who I believe signed out of his Instagram account, found my account, and then took screenshots of the photos that were on there and sent them to me, which is now why my account is private. And it I just was like, basically harassed by him and about all of that. Long story short, what happened after that situation, and keep in mind, this is just burlesque. Like, this wasn't even stripping at this point. The conversation was surrounding burlesque. And I think there was mm-hmm. also like, some of the photos were taken of me at the penthouse, but again, in a burlesque setting, or just like yeah. my ass, or like there was that taboo show where you and I were competing mm-hmm. against each other. And there was a photo yeah, of that of me there. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. And there was a photo of me there that my father had sent me being really upset over. And so I had to explain, like, I do just like that. I just do burlesque. And so, which was true at the time. And mm-hmm. so my parents sat me down and decided to have, oh my gosh, it was awful. It was like a 2-hour slut shaming conversation.
Oh my God.
Actually, I think I still have them because I took notes during that conversation, which is oh my kind God. Of hilarious. And I still have them, I believe.
Pull them up.
I'm pulling them up right now. Oh my God. It happened on April 1st, many years ago. So some of the key talking points from that conversation was, you know, they think that burlesque was demeaning and setting the women's right movement backwards. And
oh, I do remember you telling me about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I was like, no. And like, I was told how I was given like a lecture about the women's rights movement and how women fought to be in a man's space, but at the same time, like when you're doing performance arts like this and stuff, I mean, to be honest, a lot of us are taking that back. Like, we have mm-hmm. the power in a lot of those situations, like,
yes.
And it's empowering to us.
Yes.
Oh, this was actually a really funny comment. They didn't understand why I was performing these burlesque things at the penthouse, which according to them was the sleaziest strip club in Vancouver.
That's my home club, y'all. I can think of worse, but okay.
I can think of worse too. I mean, no, penthouse is not.
I love penthouse. And like, sleaziest, are we talking about the clientele? Or are we are we confused?
Are we confused here? Like, I mean, I feel like the clientele are pretty equal amongst all strip clubs. Like, let's be real. But like, honestly, a lot of clubs are pretty great. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. They were saying how they were not convinced that I'm doing burlesque for my own pleasure and that I genuinely enjoy it. They were convinced that there's a deeper issue that I have that I wasn't aware of. And so that was a point that was brought up. And I'm just like, you can't just believe that I actually like what I do.
Right.
This was a fun one. Confused why, because I have a diploma in musical theater. And so that's something I do. If you were going to do burlesque all along, why did you waste all that money going to school when you could have just skipped that and just gone on stage and taken off all your clothes? Oh, hey, taking off your clothes is an art, okay?
Yes.
It is an art. And also, like, anyone who is thinking of getting into the industry as well, especially if they want to do, like, stage performances, it's like, it's not as easy. You're going to have wardrobe malfunctions, and you do actually kind of have to practice with your pieces before you yeah. take them off, because it's an art. It's not exactly yes. like, oh, I'm just going to take it off. Like, whatever. No, that's not how that goes. Oh my God, this conversation, like revisiting it is crazy. Apparently everything I do in life needs to have intelligence.
There's no intelligence in stripping?
Yeah, I guess not. You know, I'm educating people. I'm educating people, right? Well, this is burlesque. This is burlesque. We're not even at stripping yet.
We're
not even at stripping yet. This is just burlesque. And apparently I need to be progressing the world. It was selfish of me because they said people were dying of COVID.
What?
I don't know how that had anything to do with it.
How is that even tied in?
I don't know. Oh, this was a funny one. So my parents have a tendency to make up stats and try to throw them in my face. So this is funny. They were saying how they quoted a statistic that burlesque dancers have a 90% higher chance of going into prostitution than someone from Broadway. I'm like, where did you get that info from? Like,
I'm very narrow and very specific, and I'm pretty sure it's made up. I've never heard them. Like,
they did say, oh, they were convinced I was going to get stalked and raped because I'm not being smart about posting my sexy bum photos online. Oh, dear. Because you can find my name, address, number, and everything from that, too. And we'll get into that later about my current doxing situation, which that is mm-hmm. not how my stalker situation happened. Right. My boyfriend at the time was low quality because how dare he let me do burlesque? And if he lets me, why isn't he coming to all my shows and walking me home after? Because I might get raped.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, you're usually smart when you do these things. And, like, mm-hmm. also, burlesque shows get out at, like, 11.
It's, like, so early. Night.
It's so early. Yeah. Like, the weirdos aren't even out yet. I mean, they're out all the time, honestly.
Yeah.
Jeez. Oh, yeah. And they were also saying that the friends that I made in burlesque were, like, they used air quotes around friends, implying that they were not real. And I was like, fuck you. They are real. There's a lot of
BS.
I was told that, like, oh, well, I look cute, right, and fun right now. And when I'm older, I'll be cute, but I'll not be tight and as fun. Which what is BS.
That's a weird ass statement.
I know. We all know there's actually burlesque dancers even these days that are in their 60s, and it's mm-hmm. and they're wonderful. There's even sex workers in their 60s and 70s, and they're killing definitely. It. Like,
yes.
Like, come on. Also, they tried to tell me that I was a toxic one because I should have just told them right off the bat that I was doing this, and it was a red flag in a relationship that I hid it from them. But it's like, that's a very nuanced thing where it's like, there's a reason behind why I hid it. And this whole conversation is like, gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, gee, I wonder why.
Like, are you really surprised?
Yeah. Okay. This is a funny one. This is just like a side note. This is from years ago. I don't know if their views have changed, but it's, they're like upset that I don't tell them anything. Like when I get tattoos or piercings, like I have lots of tattoos and I have some piercings, and they said, don't come crying to us when you get cancer because the tattoo ink goes into your lymph nodes.
What?
I know. Oh my gosh. Again, it's trying to like guilt trip and stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of that, a lot of assumptions, like a lot of like things that are based on stereotypes. It sounds like.
Yeah. And then this whole thing is just like, it keeps going in circles, and that's basically, this was another funny thing. They kept telling me that I was going to get sued $1 million for using the stage name Serotonin.
Because by who?
Right? And they're like, by like someone else who might have that same name. And I'm just like, well, okay, sure.
Oh my gosh. And there's a lot of like fear tactic things going on here.
And the other big one here is I'm going to ruin my future and will never be able to change careers because of it. And I'm too young to know that. So there's more there that I didn't mention. And but it's all like, again, it's all very similar. It's all very connected. Mm-hmm. This was the slut shaming conversation I had years ago. Again, purely because of burlesque, not stripping, burlesque. And so that kind of sets the scene for, you know, why I made the choices I did and then what basically happened with me. So it's just a very, like, again, so they like to use a lot of fear tactics that
yes
aren't true. There's so many things in there that aren't true.
Are baseless, too.
They're very baseless. The 90% burlesque dancers go into prostitution. Is a very wild, baseless statistic.
Over Broadway performers.
Over Broadway performers.
So random.
I'm like, hey, Broadway performers can be full service sex workers if they want. Right? Why not?
Totally.
And the whole like, oh, you can't change careers and you ruined your life, which, you know, it's 2024. I mean, this was back in like 2020 when that happened. But mm-hmm. again, it's like, we're in the future, and people, like, while, yeah, there is still a lot of stigma around it, it's not as bad as it used to be, depending on what you're doing. So I find, especially the city too that you're in, I also want to preface that as well. Like, it depends on where you live and, like, all of that jazz. So yeah, it just, you know, it depends. Like, it's that I found that to be a antiquated statement that I
think 100%.
A lot of people are actively trying to change right now. So yeah, so that sets the stage.
That sets the stage for sure. And like, yes, I mean, again, I'm like, sorry that you like went through that. And like, again, this was like a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. Yeah.
How, like, if you can transport yourself back to 2020, can you remember, like, how did you take this information? One question, but two, like, how did you receive it? And also, like, how did you handle that negative feedback?
So yes, with all of that, I remembered I cried a lot, but it didn't stop me from doing what I do. It didn't stop me from, at the time, continuing to be in burlesque. It actually drove me even more into not talking about it with my parents or not telling them about it, or when I was doing shows or performances. Because I'm like, if you're going to treat me that way, and if you're going to talk to me that way and behave that way about that, it's like, instead of me opening up more to you about it, it actually is just going to shut me off even more. It has the opposite effect. Because, you know, they think they know. What's frustrating is they think they know the world, and like 100% like black and white. They know what's right and wrong, when really it's a grayscale sort of thing, and they don't actually know what's completely right and wrong. Like, there are so many things out there, you know, that basically their views are antiquated, and it's antiquated. Like, they don't actually know. I didn't let it stop me. Thankfully, at the time, now when this happened, I had a roommate, and even though, like, I was in my bedroom, she happened to hear the whole conversation, and when I came out of my room, I was like in tears, and she was like, dude, that was fucked up. Like that. So I think having that in that moment as well, having that like support, and basically having an outsider's view being like, yo, we heard that, and that was not, like, that was really not okay. Like, that was just, like, yeah. So that actually helped ground me a little bit, because it validated me and my emotions, because I feel like if I didn't have that, then what would have happened is I probably would have just spiraled and been anxious and worried about my life and things like that, as it usually happens as someone with, you know, I have a hair in my mouth. Hang on. There we go. Aha. As someone, you know, with issues with their parents growing up and stuff like that, like, I tend to have, like, you know, the trauma, and, you know, so it kind of helped ground me in terms of my trauma response to that. And so it just, yeah, I think so. After that too, I think also having a really good support network and having friends around you that you can talk to about the situation. And it really helped having a bunch of people validate my feelings and validate that, like, what I'm doing wasn't wrong. And that I was okay, and that it was totally fine. At the time when I was still working in a corporate job, they knew that I was doing burlesque, and they were like, we'll come to your shows. Like,
really?
So it was one of those things where it was just like, you know, I had so many people around me being like, yeah, no, like, you're totally, like, you're fine. And I had a boss at the time, actually, and she was so cool. I miss her so much. She was so cool. Aww. And she was just like, you know, I wish your parents could really see how cool of a person you actually are for doing these things. And so, yeah, I think thankfully too, I had a therapist. I think having a therapist is very important for any, like, even if you are feeling mentally sound at any moment in time, I think I'm a strong proponent proponent of just like having a therapist on the ready. And I do a monthly appointment, even if I'm doing great, I still take that appointment just in case. You never know what happens. And so, yeah, I think having that also helped as well. But it was definitely like a big, like, oh my God. And, you know, just trying to process everything and feel like, and try not to go back into my inner child and be like, I feel guilty, I should just do what they say, but now be an adult and overriding that inner child, being like, no, 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 like, you can make your own decisions now and you can determine what's right and wrong, not someone else for you. So
yeah no, that's a huge thing too, because parents, again, like as I mentioned earlier, like parents think they know what's best for you, but like that's also like you're like stuck as a child. Like you are a grown-ass adult and you can make your own decisions, right? So
yeah,
it just seems like a lot of their concerns were like, and I say like concerns in air quotes, because like as your parents, again, I'm assuming have never had any lived experience in sex work.
Nope.
I'm just safe to assume that. Like, how would they know all this stuff? How would they know all these? Like, I'm sure they haven't even talked to any sex workers as well or consulted with any of them. So, like, how, like, where are they learning this? Of course, right? From society, from media and all this stuff, which is terrible sources to begin with, first of all.
Media is terrible. Media is not an accurate representation. And if you're going to do a quick Google search, it's going to be a very like biased search. Like you're not going to get accurate. You're not going to get accurate information. So
totally.
Yeah. I mean,
on that note too, like after that whole thing happened, so that first chapter, first half with the whole burlesque incident with your parents, that really caused you to kind of go into quote-unquote hiding or like keeping your identity, like on like stage persona, anonymous and secret, put on private and stuff too. And that's just because like, okay, yeah, I don't want to have to deal with this because it's a lot. Overbearing.
Yeah, really is. Yeah. And so I really went hard. And I, you know, anytime people posted anything online, it wasn't, you know, even after I changed my name to Lulu Adore and became a stripper for a while, I was like, no, don't tag me on. I don't want any photos of me online, because it was purely because I didn't want my parents to find out. And then eventually that just kind of was like, okay, I don't really care so much anymore. And I eventually stopped. My account's still private.
Yes.
But I did allow, you know, people to tag me and do photo shoots with me and things like that, and be more, I was more out and open about it. But it's funny because they're like, that is not how my parents found out about me being a stripper.
Maybe it's time to go into that second half of the story here. So, I mean, the main part. Yeah. Let's talk about the doxing situation.
So, yes. So, cycling back to the whole, like, the stalker. So, I received a strange email from someone to my real name email address. And they were basically like, oh, I've known you since before you got your tits done. And like, I was going to approach you at Taboo and see if you wanted to do like fetish videos. It just seemed very creepy. And they were like,
it is very creepy.
And like in the email too, he was like, oh, you're just so easy to find. Like, you're just easy to find your information. And I was like, I keep all my real name stuff very, very separate from my stage name stuff. Like, very, very separate. And so I was like, clearly this is someone who knew me from before. Like, it just wasn't some rando.
Yeah, for sure. This person actually, like, knows you.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, my God. And so it actually was quite freaky. And I went ahead and told my club, and I told – you know, my friends and, you know, all the girls that I worked with were awesome. They were so great about it and just like giving me advice and everything. What I opted to do is, I told my club, and I did not respond to the email at first because I was like, I don't want to engage in this. I don't want to, you know, there's no point. So then after that, I received a second email being like, why aren't you responding? Like, this and that, and still being very, very creepy about the whole situation. Like, you're so easy to find, like,
yeah,
all of that. And I'm just like, ugh. So finally I emailed back and I was like, please do not contact me again or I'll call the police. Like, I don't want to. And I also should mention, this person used, they had like a fake name and then they used a different name to sign off. And
yeah,
they used Proton Mail. Now, what I learned about Proton Mail is an email used when people really, really, really want to hide their identity. So this person is a coward hiding behind a computer screen. Basically. So after that, I actually did contact the police and they were like, we can't do anything. And they didn't even open a file for me.
That sucks for VPD, because then, I mean, yeah, I shared with you, because I also dealt with the stalker thing. I told you, like, for my YouTube channel of all things, which is like not even like 18 plus, but like here where I live, like, they opened a file up for me in my district. But I'm so surprised that Vancouver did not.
No, they didn't. And I know it's really frustrating, because it's just like, you don't open a file for me. So what if things got worse and like I needed them again? Like, they wouldn't have a file open for me. So they wouldn't be able to quickly just like, you know, look into that and see that history. So it's really unfortunate. I've learned a lot since then about how to proceed with things like that in the future. But then, so then here's where the really fucked up part comes in. So people are always, so this stalker of mine accidentally emailed my dad. How did this happen? Well, long story short, my dad and I share the same initials in real life. So
what? Is that how it happened?
Yeah. So this guy, because he thought I blocked him on my email, and so he decided to start sending me different emails to different iterations of my real name email address. One of those combinations happened to be my dad's.
I was wondering how the hell. Oh my god, that is terrible. And that's like a total fluke, because I was like, does this person know your dad? Fuck.
No, it was a total fluke. Like, the worst way. It was so bad how it went down. And so I was like, this is not, and I was freaking out, because I was just like, shit, you know, I was like, I'm a dead woman. Like, I can't. And I was like, please pray that it goes to my dad's like spam mail and he doesn't see it. And the amount of stress I felt in that, like, first, in those, like, I think it was like 12 hours before my dad saw it or something. It was so intense. Like, I just was so stressed out. I was so scared. And it's funny, because I wasn't scared of like the guy so much anymore. I was more scared of my own parents. Dad. Yeah. I was like, no. So, and it didn't help, because the email, it wasn't like a little one-off email where it was like, oh, you just dance naked. No, the email actually included photos of me at the club, done by a photo shoot, and it just was like, okay. And attached those photos to the email, and like, yeah. And also, this person was saying too, like, oh, I'll try your other friends from the club too, but they're harder to find. And I'm just like,
yeah, he kept like saying that and stressing, like, that, which is so creepy.
Yeah, it's super creepy. And it's just like, I don't understand. Like, so I honestly believe this is someone who knew me from before, because they 100%. Also knew all of my Instagram handles, like all of them. So someone who's known me for a bit, and they're just either disgruntled or hiding behind something and just like a genuine asshole. Whoever they are, fuck you.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, you know, you ruined everything, and that's on you. But
yeah,
here's a funny part too, is they, because I actually, after this whole thing went down, because I did block that email, and then I unblocked it to email the guy back, because being like, so, you know, you fucked everything up. Like, fuck you. He deleted his email.
What?
Yeah. Holy the guy shit. Deleted his email. So I will never, ever find out who, I mean, I don't think I would have ever found out who it was, but I really hope that this person is sitting with the worst guilt in the world, knowing that they just literally disrupted my whole dynamic with my family and like literally ruining my life for these last like 2 weeks. Like, they're like, I hope they know that. And if you're continuing to stalk me, I hope you know that. Like,
yeah, maybe they're listening here. Jesus
yeah.
Christ.
If you're listening, fuck you.
Yeah. Fuck you. That's not a cool thing to do. I mean, take us back. So yes, lots of dread, lots of anxiety. Yep. It did go to your dad's spam email.
It did.
And
then I got an email the next morning being like, I saw this sitting in my spam. And he basically said like, oh, we should talk. And yeah, he said like, oh, we should talk. But like, now's not the time. So my family was actually supposed to go on a family vacation. And right, like, I don't want to ruin this family vacation. And the thing is I know my dad. I know my dad too well. And I know that even though he says that, he's still going to try and do something. And so he was like, but we should talk about this. Like, I'm very disappointed in you. And he also in the email said, like, and tell your fan to stop emailing me.
Right.
So this was jarring. And then there was like, another email followed up after that, just basically like going on and on about how like disappointed he is in me and things like that. And I'm kind of, you know, I my brain has kind of blocked the email without seeing it in front of me just because there was a lot there.
There was a lot there.
But yeah, because it just it was just like it was a lot to process. And I did finally though, here, I'll just actually, let me just like, just so I can.
Yeah.
I'll just open it up a little bit. Yeah. This is cause this is, it was heavy. It was a lot. It was, hang on here.
I just remember from what you shared with me and it was like, it was a lot.
It was a lot. Yeah. So basically just telling me like, oh, I thought your daughter had a better future. Like you gave up another opportunity to do that. Like, I won't let anything ruin this trip. Like, I'm hurting more than you could ever comprehend, sort of thing. And it's just like
me, me, me.
Very me, me, me. And so I did email back. And what really struck me in those emails is there was nothing and I called him out on this. It was just like, you are so concerned about yourself that you didn't, like, your first reaction is me, me, me.
Yeah.
Not even, oh, this is scary. Are you okay?
That
not even that
would be the normal response.
The normal response. And unfortunately, with the way this goes, I kept being told like, oh, I'm just reacting how any parent would react, which is far from the truth, actually. Like, it's not how any parent would react. To make such a generalized statement, like I think every parent would react differently depending on their own upbringing, their own ideologies,
their own relationships.
So I did write back to him. And I stood up for myself, which I've never done. I've never done in my whole life. And so I did that and I said, look, like, I am so appalled that you think this was just like some friend or something. It is not. Like, I called the police and stuff like that. I told him, I was like, you know what? Like, I actually love my job. Like, believe it or not, I do. And the friends that I've made on this job are better than any friends I've ever made before. And I just was like, you know what? I'm hurting. So I said, I'm not coming on this family trip. I said, yeah. I don't feel emotionally safe being in this environment. And that's when things kind of blew up too. My mother got involved a little bit too, just being like, you need to, like, it was a lot, because it was just like, you know, I kept being told like, oh, I promise your dad will be okay. Your dad will be fine. I just knew it would not be fine. Like, I felt like, you know, so many times for things I have to sacrifice. I've always felt like I've had to sacrifice my own well-being for the sake of the family.
Right.
When I finally said, no, like, it's okay to be selfish, and it's okay. Like, you shouldn't have to walk on eggshells around this. And
yeah,
something else that I was told is like, oh, you'd think like walking into such an explosive environment, like such an explosive situation, but like, it's with your family who loves you. So like, it'll be fine. But you know, at the same time, it's like, I don't actually feel safe walking into this environment, because I know how, based off of, as I told you with the burlesque conversation, how it went, and then also how this is currently going. It's, I know what they would try and do is try and convince me that I'm wrong. Basically try and talk to me until I agree with their viewpoint, but that's not happening. And I don't have the energy to convince them that I love what I do, and that I am safe, and I am happy, and I am living a great life right now. But I don't think they will comprehend that. And
yeah,
or it's difficult for them to comprehend. My dad even said in one of his emails to me that his view on sex work, so sex workers, strippers, and even fetish performers, believe it or not, will never change. And so it's like, why would I waste my energy trying to educate or like have a constructive, it won't be a constructive conversation, because even if I try and tell you, and that's the thing, is like, a lot of his perspective on this world, you know, they think they know what's right and wrong, when really I don't think they've ever stepped into a strip club. I don't think they've ever stepped into any of this world. It's not their world. They don't know it. I actually know way more than they do about this world. And
yeah, you're living it.
I'm living it. And it's frustrating when they act like they think they know more than I do, but I actually know more than they do in this situation. And they can't tell me otherwise. Like, it's, you know, and then they're going to still try to guilt trip me and make me feel like I'm in the wrong for doing this. I'm terrible. I've thrown my life away, when really I feel like my life has blossomed and I am enjoying my life. And there are so many misconceptions out there about what I do, particularly with them. It's interesting. Like, they're super old, antiquated views. So again, cycling back to like, why would I bother having a conversation, trying to have a constructive conversation, when
their mind's already made up?
Their mind's already made up, and I can't, you know. Thankfully, my siblings, I have a couple of siblings, have all been wonderful, and they all knew what I did before my parents even did. And they were all like, yeah, woo, that's awesome. And, you know, I chatted with them about this whole situation, and, one of my siblings went on this trip, and they were wonderful. They, you know, gave me insider info on what happened and what went down. Apparently my dad kept trying to bring up my line of work and trying to make his point made, and like prove his, like get everyone to agree on his point. And my sibling was just like, hey, she's happy, whatever makes her happy. And then that's all that matters.
Good. Like, I'm so glad that they were there to back you up too.
I was really happy about that too. Like, I am so forever grateful that my, you know, siblings are so supportive and so open-minded and so like, just, yeah, they're just like, yeah, that's super cool. Like, you do what you do. We love it. And literally, it's interesting because it's like the only people in my life, literally the only people in my life that make a big stink about stripping has been my parents. No one else has made a big stink about it. Mm-hmm. Even my old boss from when I worked in one of my old corporate jobs, when I told her that I actually did tell her that I did do amateur nights before. Mm-hmm. And she was like, hey, like, you know, just be careful. But if it makes you happy, like, even she was like, whatever.
Like, yeah, right? Because it should be a whatever situation.
It should be. It should be. And, like, yeah. I understand if a parent is concerned and if a parent is worried. I get that. But, like,
yeah,
the fact that, you know, he made this whole situation all about him and his feelings. And mm-hmm. after my email I sent, my father sent back what I felt like was a very narcissistic email. I'll just say that out loud.
I was going to say that word.
It was a very narcissistic email because, I was like, for my mental health. And then all of a sudden in this follow-up email, it was like, well, what about your family's mental health? And not even trying to ask me, you know, making it again, like, I'm such a bad guy for doing this. And how dare you? You ruined a lot of things. Like, and also telling me that I was creating drama by not coming on this family vacation, that I'm causing the drama when I'm simply reacting to what is being put towards me energetically from them. So
right.
I was reacting how I would react, and I made a choice for my mental health, and I felt it was the right choice for me to make, because why should I have to put myself through like a week of walking on eggshells and being in that environment
when and being I the target
be yeah feel like I'm being a target when
yeah
it does. I don't have to be. I was like, I'm an adult. You know what? I don't have to. So yeah. So this follow-up email, and you know, just basically something that really was like really frustrating too, is just like, my dad kept saying, don't turn the situation back on me. But it's like, you know, and he was saying how like, oh, I'm sorry my words impacted you so much, but like, I'm just reacting how any loving, caring father would react. And I'm sorry, that's not how any loving father, caring father would a loving, caring father, if they got that email, would react. Are you okay? Are you safe? This is a concerning email. That would be,
it'd be like, who the fuck reaction. Is this guy?
Exactly. Yeah. Instead of being like, what you do for work is awful. This is like, you know, there's no openness. There's no openness to communication. I also should put this out there too, to make this very clear, because this really shocks people too. When I, you know, my age actually does play into it, because a lot of people, when I've described the situation to them, they're like, oh, if you were like 22 or something, we'd kind of understand a little bit more. But I'm 33. I am a grown-ass woman in my in my 30s, and when I tell them how old I am, the tone changes completely, and they're like, oh, you're a grown-ass woman. Like, and he's trying to talk to you like as if you should, you know what you're doing, and you don't know what you're doing in your life, and like, I know what's best for you, when it's like, no, I've been living my life the way I've been wanting to live it. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
That is nuts. Like, man.
And something else, it's just like, and he kept saying, like, did you ever, like, think about how us discovering you being a stripper would have an impact on us? Like, again, trying to turn the situation. It's like, ooh, Dad, you know, why is it all about you all of a sudden? Like, why can't you think about how I feel? And also, like, how many of your friends, again, like, this whole, like, like all these good friends of yours, how many of their parents or siblings like support them in what they do? And in my head, I'm just like, actually a lot. Like, there are a lot of strippers that I know of whose parents know what they do. And even if they aren't fully supportive, they're supportive in a way where they can still have constructive conversations. They don't necessarily fully agree with what they do, but they're still not scary and not like, blame you, and how dare you, you ruined everything sort of thing. And then he also was something else that he said too was just like, and then of course he brought it back to like this, like, do I fear for your safety? Like, yeah, like, of course I do. But did you know that, like, did your club even care about your safety?
Actually, yes.
They do. Actually, believe it or not, a lot of clubs do care about their girls' safety.
Yeah.
That I think that's another big misconception in this industry as well. Is like, no, they actually do care about the safety of us. And because without us, there isn't a club. Like, you know what I mean? It's like without us, there isn't a service. So it's just like,
Lulu, this is a lot. It's like,
it is a lot.
I am so sorry that you have to relive this again through sharing your story here. Because it's very heavy.
It is heavy.
Can I ask how you're processing right now? Because this is still fresh.
I'm processing. It's difficult right now. Thankfully, I have a lot of wonderful support around me. I fear the worst is not over. Like, you know, the Band-Aid's been ripped off. But as I know with what happened with the burlesque conversation, I fear another conversation like that is coming at me. And I feel like my body is in constant fight or flight mode right now. So I have been very stressed out for the last couple of weeks since this all went down. I don't think I've had a moment of pure relaxation. It's just been stress. And I feel it. I'm trying really hard to kind of relax more, but it's hard knowing that this isn't over. Yeah. I haven't actually spoken to either of my parents in, I guess, about 2 weeks now. I haven't said anything to them. So, yeah, that's just like, you know, but I'm still dreading that moment when, like, we do have to speak again. I did make a boundary with my father saying, like, I will need time to process all of this. So I need you to respect that boundary. If that, I don't know what's going to happen, but I've just mostly kept to myself. And part of the reason why I haven't tried to fight is, again, like, when you tell me that your views aren't going to change and all of that, like, it's hard for me. Like, why should I try and fight for my perspective when you're not going to change your view, change your mind?
I can't blame you.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to do a lot of self-care right now.
Good.
I had a lot of friends around me who are very supportive. Like, literally everyone is so supportive. And, you know, it's really been great seeing the amount of support that's come out from this, which has been really awesome. But yeah, it's interesting because being doxxed to your parents when you fear them in this situation is really something else.
Yeah. And it's very scary, very intrusive. And again, like, this wasn't this person's choice to make. Like, if you wanted to come out to your parents, maybe you would have, you know?
That's the thing, is I actually had been talking to my therapist about it. Like, okay, when might I do it? When might I rip the Band-Aid off, sort of thing? And this was something that was in the talks, but the choice was not made for me. And again, it's like, there's a reason why I didn't say anything about my job, and it wasn't because I'm ashamed of what I do. It's because I know how they would react. And again, I know for a fact that the argument they would use against me is, well, if you knew this is how we would react, then why are you doing it? It's like, that shouldn't be an argument for anything at all.
No,
like,
that doesn't even play into anything.
Your own opinions shouldn't, your own judgmental opinions about things should not impact how I live my life. Again, as long as I'm happy and I'm healthy and most importantly, I'm safe. Exactly.
Yes.
As long as I'm safe, that's what's most important. Like, you know, I keep myself quite safe. You know, I wish I could let them know, like, you know, I'm sober when I'm in the club. Like, I'm actually sober in general. Like, I don't, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Like, I just mean that, like, I just don't like to drink. I don't, I don't like doing any drugs. And there's like no shame on people who do like to do those things. Yeah. But it's just like any job, right? Like with any job, like you wouldn't drink heavily on the job, would you? Mm-hmm. So I don't do that. I don't accept random drinks from customers ever. Like if they buy me a drink, I make sure that I get it directly from the server and things like that. Or if they give me a Red Bull, I'll just ask for the can unopened, like have it be brought to me. Totally. You know, I don't take any drugs. I don't do any of that. I don't go home with any customers. I don't, you know,
You're smart.
You make smart decisions. And it's
good decisions. Yeah.
It's like, you can be safe when you're being a stripper. Like you just have to make smart decisions. And, you know, there's lots of different ways that you can make smart decisions in these, you know, when you're a sex worker, lots of different ways. There is no, I mean, I feel like the only way that, you know, the only non-smart decisions is honestly when you're working. And I can only speak to being a stripper. I can't speak to other aspects of sex work because I don't have experience in that. But like in a stripper environment in a club, like as long as you're not getting wasted off of your ass, you're because that's when you see girls get taken advantage of.
When it happens
or they get drugged or unfortunately, and that's
but
the thing is like you treat it as if you're going to a nightclub anywhere else, right? Like these things, and they don't just happen at the strip club. Like I think that's another big misconception. Like if you're a stripper, it will happen to you. It's like you could be a female presenting bodied person going into a nightclub. The same thing happens. You still have to be cautious. Like, I'll make sure no one gives you a random drink. You have to make sure no one spikes your drink. Like, same thing.
All that stuff is valid for sure.
Yeah. Except in a nightclub, you're not working. You're wanting to actually party and have fun.
Yeah, so, and have fun.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's just like, you can't really speak. Like, you can be quite safe doing this job.
Totally.
I don't know. Yeah.
Going forward. No, this is again, all valid points for sure. But like, I guess like, have things shifted now, I guess, moving forward? Like, have you had to change anything? Have you had to adjust anything in terms of like safety or online safety, even like any precautions that you've had to take?
That's a good question. No, I haven't had to change anything. Everything that I'm still currently doing is fine. I still have my real name very, very, very separate from my former name. So the two don't cross over. You can actually Google Lulu Adore and my real name doesn't pop up. So like, I haven't had to change anything because at the end of the day, the person that stalked me was clearly someone who knew me in the past. So it wasn't like it was some rando. And again, stalker situations, they can happen to
anybody.
Not just sex workers. It can happen to literally anybody. So no, I haven't had to change anything safety wise. I have a great safety net here. Thanks to you, I live in a very secure building.
Thank you.
With two cats that would probably do nothing if an intruder ever broke in, but that's okay. I have lots of pleaser heels to defend myself with.
Double up as good weapons.
They do. Yeah. Just take them off and go, no.
I mean, Lulu, this is such such a powerful story. So I really commend you and thank you for your bravery for bringing this to light, because it can be very vulnerable for you to speak about this. It can really open up some very fresh wounds as well, but I'm really hoping that your story can help others as well that might be in this situation, because I know, like, even recently, I think I told you before we went on air, but like another one of my past guests is currently in the situation of being doxxed right now too. So unfortunately, in this industry, people just have terrible intentions and honestly are malicious and want to ruin lives. Like, I cannot think of any other way, like, motivation except to ruin people's lives intentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. But like, again, thank you for sharing your story. Just give us some insight on like what you've been going through, how you've been coping, and how you've been navigating post-doxing. There were a couple of questions that did come in from the audience as well, which I think would be helpful for this conversation too.
Yeah.
So let's continue that. The first one is, how were you able to stay logical and calm throughout the whole thing?
So, I mean, of course, my initial reactions were not logical and calm to begin with. I will say I definitely had a trauma response, a very big emotional response. But what really, really helped me to stay logical and calm long term was having that support network around me. And I think something else that's really important too is when you're in a situation like that, especially with my parents, I did not respond to their messages right away. I think it's important when you get messages like that to just stop, take a breath. Don't respond in the heat of the moment with your emotions, because you might not convey what you want accurately to them. So I actually waited like a day or two before I sent a message back to them. I also would strongly recommend if you do are going to send a message back, don't write, like write it out. Like I do everything on my phone. I would write it out as a note in my phone first and read it. Maybe have like a friend read it over to make sure that it sounds like you have all your talking points in there. Or if you're doing it on your laptop, like have a draft of the email first. And so
yeah,
I found having those things really helped me stay grounded and keep me logical in this situation. And so, yeah, just reminding yourself it's okay to not respond right away. That's fine.
Yeah, no, those are very, very, very helpful hints, advice, tips. Yeah, no, that's very helpful indeed. I guess along the same lines of that, this person writes in, do you have any safety tips now after experiencing being doxxed?
Yeah. So safety tips, I mean, honestly, like I said before, I haven't had to change anything about my safety in terms of, you know, going home or things like that. I mean, anytime you're at the club or something like that, and I mean, every girl is different in terms of like how they get home from the club. I personally, because I live in such a safe building, I would make sure that the bouncer would ensure that I get into the taxi cab so that I'm not waiting outside alone. Like, never wait outside alone. If you have someone else that can be with you, if you can have a bouncer watch you get into a taxi to make sure that you are safe and on your way home. I know what some other girls do is they actually walk away from the club that they're at and get picked up somewhere else. Yes. All of those are, you know, again, depending on your own situation and what you feel most comfortable with. Again, I live in a very, very secure building. So the only reason I got picked up in front of my club to begin with is because I knew that like there was no way they were going to get into this building. That said, now I have a car, so I don't have to worry about that anymore. I also, the other thing too with safety is, you know, I like to, if anyone happens to be on the way home for me, like I like to offer rides to other girls because we all like to look out for each other. Carpooling is an amazing thing to do. Yes. Online safety, again, like I never cross my two lives together. So it's funny. I have like a real person account on Instagram, but I don't use it.
Ever. Yeah, you don't use it anymore. I'm like, when's the last time you used that account?
Last time I used that account was like, what? And so I have my stripper account. If you are, I know a lot of strippers do this. If you are very concerned, put it on private. So my account's on private, and then that way you have to approve all of your follow requests. And so that way you can see like, is this a customer from the club? Like, did I like this customer from the club? Or like something else too. Like if you have a really creepy customer at the club, especially if your account's private, this is really great. If someone's really creepy from the club and they want your Instagram handle, you can give it to them, but then later block them and not accept the request when you get home. So that way you put yourself in a situation at the club where you're not fighting with someone, but you're still like, you still have that power. So having a private account can be really, really useful.
I like that.
Don't ever. Shoot. All right. Microphone fell. Edit the microphone fall out. Edit the microphone fall out. Okay. The other thing, don't ever give out your real phone number to anybody.
Yeah.
Except like your close friends. Like, I mean, obviously trust if you know friends. Them.
Yeah.
So if, for example, a customer is always asking me for my number, I just said, nope, I don't have one. If you want to contact me through my Instagram. I do know some girls have fake numbers. There's burner accounts that you can get. Again, it depends on the line of work that you do. Some girls have two phones for their, you know, different jobs and stuff like that. Yeah, so there are lots and lots and lots of options out there for you. Yeah, I mean, honestly, and then the rest of it just comes down to like your standard social safety awareness when it comes to just like walking around and out and about and stuff like that. And if you're thinking of working in a strip club, a lot of them are super safe. Like, you know, the bouncers care about the girls' safety. I mean, the one that I work at, you know, if a guy so much as touches your ass, you go and talk to the bouncer and they're like, you're out. And they kick him out and you wave goodbye to them.
Like, peace. But
again, like I have to say, the laws in BC are very different. We have a very strict no touching rule here. I know that's not the case all over the rest of the world.
It's just very, it's anomaly here.
Yes,
we're very special.
Well, and Alberta. Alberta's very special that way too.
It's a West Coast thing. So
it's a West Coast thing, yeah. But we love it when we get Alberta boys, or even better, Saskatchewan boys, because they don't even have strip clubs there. They're like, yeah, we just got to see pussy. Great.
They're like deprived.
yeah, they're very deprived. So we're Saskatchewan customers are always my favorite.
But they're
honestly.
Great. They're so wholesome and lovely, and there's like naked bodies.
They're just genuinely happy to be there.
Yes, like, which I love. That's very wholesome.
Anyways, but yeah, so honestly, safety-wise, like always make sure that like, you know, you have check-in buddies. Make sure that, you know, if you can carpool. If you're taking a taxi or something, make sure like either you are getting picked up away from the club or you make sure a bouncer sees you get into the car so no strangers lurking around, you know, come at you. The other thing with Uber, so I don't take Uber anymore whenever coming home from the club because, like, it has, like, your name and stuff in there. You can actually change your name in Uber. So you can,
I didn't know that.
Apparently you can't. I haven't done that, but I don't really use Uber. I only use Uber for food. I don't use it for getting around anymore. I used to a lot, but Yeah, so with Uber too, like you can also have them drop you off like away from the club and things like that.
Right.
So yeah, again, it's not hard staying safe. Honestly, it's really just like what you would normally do to stay safe, plus like just not using your real name.
Yeah.
And talking about your number.
Yeah, you do a lot of things, obviously, like really correct in order to really maintain your anonymity and your safety online and in person too. So like, yeah, I was like really shocked when I heard this. Like, I really still do believe it was something that like knew you from like your past and had access to your accounts and stuff too, and had been following you for a while. So again, like, I'm super sorry this has happened to you, Lulu. It like still like, ugh, just makes my stomach feel all weird, like when you talked about this situation. And just know that we're here for you, and I'm really hoping that this story and this episode has been able to help somebody out there that's possibly listening. So
and like, if anyone's listening and they want to reach out to me, that's totally fine too. I'm sure my Instagram handle will be linked somewhere.
Oh, so. Yeah, let's do that now. Yeah, that's it's that time for a perfect transition. Ex-podcaster, so yeah, you know. So, but where can we find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. My handle is lulu.adore. The dot is like as in a period, not the word dot. So lulu.adore. Where else can you find me? I actually just started a TikTok for my stripper side of
things. Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah. I got to follow
because
you.
Because everything's all out in the open, I went, fuck it, let's just do it now. That account handle is slightly different because lulu.adore was taken.
What? Really?
I know. So it's all one word. It's all one word. It's the Lulu Adore.
Perf.
All one word for TikTok. So I have a TikTok and I have an Instagram.
There you go. Easy peasy. Those links are in the show notes below. So go check them out. Go give Lulu a nice follow if you want to reach out. her DMs might be open if you send her a follow request. So we'll go from there. But everyone else listening, thank you so much for listening in today. It's going to be new episodes every single Sunday dropping at midnight. Again, if you like the show, feel free to like, rate, share, do all the things, rate 5 stars, write a review, do all the things that you should be doing as a loyal listener. And of course, it's patreon.com/strippedbysia if you want to donate financially. And if you want to reach out to me, it's Stripped by Sia podcast on Instagram. And then if you want to catch me on X, I'm much more frequent on there. It's Stripped by Sia. And yeah, happy to chat. My DMs are not always open, but you can try. But yeah, you can also pay up. And that's, I do have an OnlyFans for there, but I don't promote it on here. But if you do, it's easily findable, I think. But yeah, last thing, if you want to pitch yourself to be on the show, strippedbysia.com. You could click on the contact link there and pitch your idea to me. I am going to be starting to look at season 7 guests. So now would be a good time to do that. So, but I mean, with that being said, Lulu, it was fantastic having you on the show
today. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much again for your bravery, your vulnerability, and just sharing your story today. And I hope this has also helped you in your healing process as well in some sort of way. So thank you.
Of course. No, thank you for like giving me that platform to chat about it. It's something that I feel like it should be talked about more with other sex workers. So
yeah, definitely. Until next time. But yes, everyone tune in. Next episode's coming in on Sunday. Thank you all.
You're listening to Stripped by Sia, hosted, produced, and edited by Steph Sia, music by Ted D, graphic design by Maria Bellendorama, and photography by Ian Dabrin.